Pretty much every like week we would come home from school and our mom would be like, is there any other sports you guys want to try out?
Same year that Phoenix Muni was opening up, so the ownership brought those light poles over here and they still stand here today.
And now I'm to the point where I feel comfortable enough to walk.
Still out here trying to win a state championship, so I mean, rankings won't make or break me.
This is The Sweet Spot, a show about the week's biggest sports stories in Arizona. I'm Sam Eddy.
The Arizona State Sun Devil women's lacrosse team is in the midst of its first season with head coach Taryn Van Thoff at the helm. The roster under Van Thoff is unique in which the team has two sets of twins, Bella and Gigi Gaspar, and Maddie and McKenna Riley.
In a two-part series, Ben and I talk to the Gaspars first about what it's like to be a twin. The junior defenders from Canada are practically connected by the hip and are each other's day ones, literally. Now here's our interview with the Gaspar twins after one of their recent practices.
What was it like for you guys just growing up having a twin?
To be honest, it's the best thing ever. Like, I could not imagine not having a twin. It's a built-in best friend. Like, we've done everything together since we were born. And it's the best. Like, I love her so much. She's my best friend. We do everything together. And I guess growing up, it's just kind of funny because, like, we'll go to, say, like, camps or something. They'll be like, grab a partner. And it's automatically, like, we have each other. Every experience that we've ever had, I just feel like has just been a lot more enjoyable because I have, like, automatically Gigi with me always.
Yeah, I mean, built-in best friend, it's the best thing ever. I honestly just couldn't imagine not having a twin. Obviously, it's all I've ever known, but it's just the best thing. Like, getting to go to college with each other is, like, an experience that a lot of people don't get, and we're attached at the hip, so it's, like, I couldn't imagine doing anything without her, where we really do everything together, so it's awesome. I love it.
So growing up, did you both start playing lacrosse, or did one get into it before the other, or was it just a package deal?
Yeah, actually, so in Canada, we play box lacrosse, which is, it's pretty much boys lacrosse, like full contact in a hockey arena, but just with cement. And so we had a lot of guy friends who played it when we were younger, and they were all coming to school with like concussions and getting injured. So we played hockey at the time. My hockey coach was like, you guys should get into box lacrosse. And I was like, okay, like sounds awesome. Sign me up, like let's go. But Gigi was a little bit more timid at first. So the first year, she's like, I'll let Bella play. If she doesn't get a concussion, I'll go for it too. First year I played, we didn't get a concussion, so we both hopped on the train afterwards.
Yeah. And so then from then on, it's been like we played every team together, same position, always. Like, we were recruited as midfielders, came to college, both went to defense. So that was just, we've done everything together, and we're like, our ability is pretty much identical as well. So it's just funny because whatever she does, I can do. But that time I just needed a little bit of a buffer. One of the only times we've ever, like, only like one out of two times we've ever not been on the same team. We've pretty much always started things at the same time. That was just an odd occasion, but yeah. well good now.
Yeah. Do you guys play other sports besides hockey and box lacrosse growing up?
Yeah. We played pretty much every sport. To be honest, like, well, in high school we were on 5 varsity teams, so we didn't actually have a girls lacrosse team in high school, so we played on the boys lacrosse team. We were really big into basketball, volleyball, track, soccer, so that was kind of, we did all that. And then obviously box lacrosse was where we started our lacrosse journey. Hockey, dabbled with gymnastics, like we did a bunch
field
of stuff,
hockey,
just anytime
baseball,
there was a sport. Field hockey, yeah.
Pretty much every like week we would come home from school and our mom would be like, is there any other sports you guys want to try out? And we'd have one like every single week. Or she'd be like, oh, like my coworker's daughter's playing field hockey, want to get into that? We're like, sure. So we really honestly played, I think, every sport. I like every, like, organized, I think.
It was besides softball.
Besides softball, yeah. But that wasn't as big in Canada.
And for you guys, what was that decision process like, choosing school? Obviously, you said you wanted to go together. Was there ever a time where you guys disagreed or you weren't sure, like, maybe we won't go at the same school?
Yeah, I mean, I think being uncommitted going into your senior year for lacrosse, when our aspirations were to go D1, it's really hard because most of the classes are filled. But when we were talking to different schools and stuff, we were kind of like, at this point, if there's a school that wants one of us, it wasn't really like a consideration for us, because I literally wouldn't survive like without her. And that sounds like really dumb, but it's like we really are best friends. And like even here, like it's been the best 3 or so years of my life, and like without her I couldn't even imagine like it, even though it's still like so awesome. I just couldn't do it without her. But yeah, was it like challenging? Not, it was like stressful. Everyone's always like, I feel like in the recruiting process, everyone's always like, trust the process. But when you're uncommitted, it's October of your senior year, you're kind of like, process is getting hard to trust. But it really did, it all worked out. And yeah, we're super grateful for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that it's stressful. But again, yeah, I don't think we really did ever consider going to separate schools, even though Yeah, honestly, it wasn't really a consideration because there was always the backup plan of we'd play basketball in college in Canada if nothing worked out in the States. But yeah, so at that point, we had applied to a couple schools in Canada and we had a few like backup D2 offers if needed, but we're just really blessed that this all worked out together. It's really uncommon, I feel.
So now that you're here, has like your relationship changed at all? Has it like become stronger? Like, I played a D1 sports hard, obviously. So like just having each other, what's that been like through this process here?
Yeah, I mean, do you want to go first?
You can go.
Okay. yeah, I feel like we've always been super, super close. But I think just like being away from home, it's made us even closer just because we don't have our family, our original friends from high school and stuff. Like you're basically put into this completely, I mean, a whole new country, a whole new environment. Like it's definitely was an adjustment freshman year, but like our team's super awesome. So that's made it super easy too. Just you automatically have 40 best friends. But when you have someone that you know you can trust, you know you can go to with anything, like when things do get hard or like we have a tiring practice, we both went through it together. So that makes it like super easy to just be like, yeah, we both feel that way. Like we're always on the same wavelength.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't necessarily say it's gotten stronger, I guess, but it's been cool, like kind of, because I feel like we've grown a lot since being here. So I feel like, especially when we came in as freshmen, it was obviously during COVID. So there was a lockdown on the borders. So a lot of people's parents were able to visit them, like if they were in the States, but we didn't have any contact except for like FaceTime with our family for 4.5 months. Like coming into a brand new experience like this, it was pretty like, it was just very unique, very different. And it was, I definitely wouldn't have gotten through it without Gigi. So I feel like we've definitely like matured together a lot here, which is like cool. And again, like we have the same like capacity, I feel, for a lot of things. So we've been able to like push each other a lot more to grow like physically stronger. Like we've like she was saying, like if we have tough practices, we're both in it together. And even if one of us is having a bad day, we can always like lift each other up. So I feel like it's been really helpful because we've just gotten each other through like some difficult times if need be, because I feel like one of us is always, we always pick each other up if one of us is slacking, I feel.
Yeah, does your guys' relationship change at all when you're on the field versus off the field?
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say change. I think we definitely act a little bit differently on the field because it's not just like the two of us. When it's just the two of us, like we have our own like language, like it's we are just the two of us, like it's funny. But like on the field, obviously it's a cohesive unit with we play defense, so like with that whole defensive unit, like I think we're a little bit more I don't know, I would say we're still the same people, it's just a little bit less silly.
Yeah,
we're very silly off the field. Like when it's just us, it's hard to explain to like people who just aren't around us all the time. I'm sure like our roommate has like seen us when we're just ourselves, but like I feel like when we're on the field, we're definitely, you know, you're locked in like when you're on the field. Whereas I'd say we're very like dialed whenever we're in like a lacrosse setting. I feel like we're very dialed. Like we've both been very like focused ever since we've gotten here, like on truly trying to like be the best players we can be. But.
So there's another set of twins on the team. Mm-hmm. One, have you ever played with another set of twins? And just how has that been like? Do you guys kind of have a relationship with them off the field that you can relate with one another? Because you two have each other, but then you have a whole nother set of twins that you can like relate to as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've played with other sets of twins before, but I don't think identical.
Yeah.
I think that it's pretty cool. Like, I feel like I've never, I don't know, twins to me, like, I know I've been a twin for 21 years, but every day I'm literally, like, it's such a cool concept to me. Like, I don't know, it's just crazy that there's two people that look exactly the same, and I think it's cool having another set of identical twins on the team, because when I see them, I'm like, whoa, like, that's actually crazy that they look the same. Although, I think McKenna and Maddie do act a little bit like, their personalities are a little bit different, whereas I think mine and Gigi's resemble each other a little more, but I don't know, it's definitely a very cool experience, I'd say.
Yeah, it was definitely funny, because our freshman year, we were the only set of twins, and then coming in last year, we had a whole other identical set, so everyone on the team was like, we just finished being able to tell these two apart, and now we have to tell a whole other set apart. So that's pretty funny, but it's fun to like crack jokes with them, because there's like certain things that like really only identical twins would understand, and they're like awesome. Yeah, their personalities are so fun. It's been really cool to just like get to know them and like play with another set of identical twins. We play different positions and stuff, but it's just cool to see them interact, because I don't see identical twins that often, so to have them like here is awesome. Yeah.
Speaking of telling each other apart, growing up, was it ever annoying for you guys having, you know, someone possibly call you the wrong name, or especially while you're playing, if they don't know the difference in numbers, since you guys have almost identical numbers?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, if I let it annoy me, like, I would probably never be happy. yeah, it's been something that since, like,
I was literally 3 or 4 years old, like, since I can remember, people always mix us up. At this point, if someone says Bella, I automatically, like, turn my head just in case they're meaning to say Gigi. I think it's funny. I get a chuckle out of it. Usually after, like, 2 weeks, people can tell us apart, sort of, if they're with us more often. But, yeah, I mean, it's people have a difficult time all the time. I think we go through phases where we look more or less alike, which is kind of funny. But, yeah, it's just kind of what comes with the business. Yeah, I would say, yeah, same thing. It's actually kind of funny. Like, when we were really young, our parents would, like, purposely mess us up our names so that we would get used to, like, answering to each other. So I feel like, honestly, that was really helpful because I've never been, like, one to judge someone, really. If unless it's, like, after a really long time, maybe I'd be like, okay, you should probably know this by now. But for the most part, I mean, yeah, I definitely wouldn't take it, hold it against anyone, because
some days I'll look in the mirror and be like, yeah,
do a double take.
Bella. Literally. Not often, but sometimes.
Yeah.
And then, is there a meaning behind the numbers having them 98 97?
So we were completely different. I was 17 all my life. Bella was 9 for, like, lacrosse. That was kind of our lacrosse numbers. But then coming into college, we had a super big senior class my freshman year, so there was pretty much no number options, like, at all. So we were like, okay, well, 17's taken and 9 is taken, so we're like, okay, well, let's just, like, get numbers that are close to each other. There was only, like, 40s, 50s. I was just like, that's just not my number. Like, I wasn't feeling it. And then we're like, let's just go super high. Why not? There's not much rhyme or reason. We're just like, we want it to be close. And these are we weren't going to go 99 because that's, like, Wayne Gretzky. It's, like, the Canadian legend. So we're like, we can't go that high, but we'll go 98, 97. That'll do. Yeah, that's pretty much how it came. There's not really any, like, significance. But now, honestly, I've grown to really like this number. I think it's...
Yeah.
And I like, our names getting announced at the same time and stuff. It's just, like, nice to be next to her.
Worked out well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, my last question. Is it true, like, can twins finish each other's sentences? Do you have, like, some superpower that you can, like, read each other's minds, like, anything like that?
Any telepathy?
Yeah.
Not really. Yes. Like, yes, we do, because anytime, like, me and Bella won't even have to, like, say anything, and we'll know kind of what each other's thinking. Maybe not the exact, like, word for word what we're thinking, but, like, we'll see something, and we'll both be like, you know, we can just, because we've experienced literally every single thing in our life together, so we react the same to pretty much everything. So it's pretty funny. Like, I don't feel her pain or anything, but, like, I definitely know when she's, like, actually hurt, or, like, if there's, like, an actual issue going on, or if it's just kind of, like, we can read each other like a book, like, for sure. Yeah. But I can't we can finish her sentences sometimes. We say things at the same time a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes we'll say things at the same time, and people will, like, be like, well, that was twin telepathy. But I don't know. I mean, twin telepathy to, like, an extent, I guess, maybe it's a little bit real. But I also think that kind of comes with, like, literally living with someone your whole life. Like, I'm sure if you just lived with someone and were around them 24/7, you would probably get a pretty good read on them as well. But I definitely, there is some things that sometimes happen, though, and I'm like, okay, maybe that was, like, a sixth sense kind of thing, whether it be on the field or, like, off the field. Like, sometimes I'm like, okay, maybe that was a little bit more than just being really close. But I don't know. I'm not sure if it's not what the, like, mind reading, like, what people think, I wouldn't say.
Bella and Gigi shared a lot about what life is like as a set of twins. While the two sisters are each other's best friends, there is another pair of twins on the team who can relate to them better than anybody else.
Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Sweet Spot, where Ben and I interview the Riley sisters about their experiences of being twins. From Cronkite Sports, I'm Sam Eddy.
And I'm Bennett Sylvan.
Phoenix Municipal Stadium has a rich history dating back to 1964. Jeff Hinkle breaks down everything that's happened between now and then.
Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, and Willie Bloomquist. What do they all have in common? Well, yeah, all of their first names are Willie, but if you guessed that they've all stepped on the field at Phoenix Municipal Stadium, you'd be correct. Arizona State University has one of the most unique home ballparks in all of college baseball. Not many programs get to say that their stadium was once a spring training home, and even fewer get to say that they play under the lights of the hallowed Polo Grounds. Oh yeah. The same light poles that lined the field when Russ Hodges called one of the most dramatic walk-off home runs in history. Now sit at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. But how did they get there?
They were tearing down the Polo Grounds the same year that Phoenix Muni was opening up. So the ownership brought those light poles over here, and they still stand here today.
That's James Voice, who has been at Phoenix Municipal Stadium, or Phoenix Muni, for 23 years, and is currently the director at the stadium. Phoenix Municipal Stadium opened in 1964. It was originally the spring training stadium of the San Francisco Giants, who were staying in Mesa at the Buckhorn Baths Motel and needed a place to play their games.
They were here till 81, and then Oakland was here 82 to 14, and now we're 24/7, 365 Sun Devil baseball.
With the Cubs' eventual move to Sloan Park and HoHoCom Stadium being left vacant, the A's eventually moved out of Phoenix Muni and into the newly renovated stadium in Mesa. But how does having ASU baseball differ from having the A's and Giants play spring training ball at the stadium?
Spring training, the games don't count. And people are here for sun, cold beverage, see players, get autographs. Sun Devil baseball, these games matter. It matters a lot to our alumni, to our players, to the university. And so there's a passion for the games that's as real as you can get.
Huh. That's funny. That almost sounds like a quote from the 2010 movie Moneyball. Oh, and speaking of Moneyball, the stadium has a little bit of a tie to the movie. It wasn't quite filmed at Phoenix Muni, but according to Voice,
they were here for a week. It was quite a mini circus going on because we really were all under strict guidelines to keep it under tight wraps that Brad Pitt was going to star in the movie. The people that put the sets together, they were in the locker room. They had trunks rolled in. It looked just like Oakland's. They were folding towels. I remember we had a person who worked here named Fred Wallace. He said, hey, that's not how the A's fold their towels. And they said, really, show us. And they were folding the towels, to be exact. I mean, everything was, we were ready to go Saturday, and at 5:01 p.m. on Friday, they pulled the plug on it.
So from the history of the Say Hey Kid Willie Mays to almost starring in a movie, Phoenix Municipal Stadium has seen a little bit of everything. And in the eyes of James Voice,
there's no other school in the Pac-12 that compares to this ballpark.
From Cronkite Sports, I'm Jeff Hinkle.
Jake Borup, a former ASU pitcher and Phillies minor leaguer, was thrown a curveball late last October when he suffered a heart attack that hospitalized him until 3 days before Christmas. Caitlin Parahinock spoke with Jake and his wife about the day and life since.
I mean, life is wild, right? Like, 1 minute you're fully healthy, and the next minute you're waking up in a hospital room with doctors and nurses and everything like that.
I might get emotional. I'm going to try not to.
Last October, at the beginning of the month, I started noticing that part of my workout I'll do a stair stepper, and I couldn't quite catch my breath. So I hopped off the stairs and just took a break, and then it went away. That happened for a few more days. And then Friday, October 28th,
we were at the gym maybe 30 minutes before we left.
The minute that I started working out, I felt it. And I had to go in the locker room and kind of sit down and just calm down. I'm like, all right, I definitely need to go to the emergency room.
He was texting me saying, oh my goodness, this is getting worse. I really think I need to get this looked at.
About 9:30, we hopped in the truck and drove to the hospital. And I remember on the way telling her, like, hey, I'm going to pass out. And I did.
Next thing I know, I looked over and his eyes were just like fixed open. And then the next time I looked at him, his eyes rolled in the back of his head and he started to have a seizure. His body was convulsing, making weird noises with his mouth, like dry heaving. And then I look over and he just goes like stiff. His head turned bright, like tomato red. And he just went stiff and started to like foam at his mouth. And about 2 minutes later, Jake took a deep breath and kind of came to and was like, I feel better. We don't need to go to the hospital. And I was like, no, we're going. Like, you didn't witness that.
And so I walked into the hospital and I told the emergency people, hey, my heart is jacked up. My chest hurts really bad. I'm going to pass out. I need you guys to take care of me.
And I was not even 5 minutes behind Jake, and I walked in and he was in a room hooked up to EKGs, and they were telling him he was having a heart attack.
All sorts of wires coming out of me, and I'm like looking at this doctor like, what's going on? And he's like, dude, you're having a massive heart attack. And that's when I passed out, and I don't remember anything for about 40-45 days.
Then they proceeded to say, it looks like one of his main vessels is dying and we need to transport you to Banner Heart Hospital. And I was in the waiting room maybe 5-8 minutes before they called Code Blue, and I knew it was Jake because I know in the car, I know he had died. He didn't just pass out. They said he's paralyzed, which in terms I found later is like he's in a medically induced coma. His kidneys were shutting down, his liver took a shot, his lungs were struggling. About an hour later, we were able to go back and see Jake, and he was just, he looked like a dead person hooked up to machines. And I think at that moment, like seeing Jake and hearing like how bad it was, I think hearing how bad it was pretty hard for me. But then to see him was like, well, my husband might not survive this. Like, I can see for myself, like, the state he's in, you know? They ended up putting him on ECMO, which the next day I put together by myself that it was life support. They just kept trying things and nothing was working. There were so many doctors that couldn't get on the same page, and so he would just sit, and they were hoping his heart would heal a little bit on its own with this pump that was already in there. There was one doctor in particular, this heart surgeon, that was really pushing for Jake to have an LVAD, and no other doctor was on board. One day, this doctor comes in from out of town, Dr. Amabile. He's like, this is it. He's not changed. He's not getting better. We're doing an LVAD within 48 hours. He asked how I felt about it. He said, there's super high risks of dying. He said, but right now there's 100% chance of dying if we do nothing. He's like, he's going to get pneumonia, sepsis, something. He's going to die of something if we do nothing. We're on the 50-yard line with 3 seconds left in the game. It's a Hail Mary at this point. And he looked at me and he raised his shoulders and said, but Hail Marys are caught. Wednesday morning, he was taken down to surgery, and Dr. Amabile came in, hugged me before surgery, and said, I want to reiterate how big of a Hail Mary this is. And he said, all the other Hail Marys I've done in the past have not been successful. And he said, but they've all been older. The only thing Jake's got going for him is his age and his liver. He said, somehow his liver's hanging on. And I walked down with Jake in the elevator and held his hand, and when I grabbed his hand, he squeezed it 3 times and told me he loved me. I got the update that his right ventricle looked good enough and they did the LVAD, and I just cried pure joy. And the nurse practitioner was like lifting up his catheter and was like, look at all this liquid gold. Like, his kidneys were already just working. So after a few days, it was like he was only progressing more and more and was like waking up a little bit more and not coughing up blood. And his x-rays were getting better. The fluid was leaving his lungs. Like, it was, each day was a better day. And it was just that much more hopeful that he wasn't gonna die. When they took the ventilator out, he did tell me that I've missed you so much. So he remembered who I was, he remembered why he was in the hospital, he knew our kids' names, but he was also confused about a lot of things. And while he was, you know, out of it for that whole month, he was living like a hallucination dream. So he has a reality for him that was not the hospital reality.
I got out of the hospital the 22nd of December. Thankfully, I made it home for Christmas with my family. So I couldn't walk for probably 2 months. So my wife would have to wheelchair me around everywhere and, you know, try to help me get into the wheelchair and then roll me around.
Physical therapy started to come 3 days a week. That was very, very draining for him. She'd be here, I think, in like 30 minutes and he'd be wiped out the rest of the day.
I was able to kind of go from a wheelchair to a walker, and I could walk, you know, probably the length of my house without getting tired. One day I finally just had enough energy where I was like, you know, forget it, I'm ditching this walker. And then I just would be really careful walking, and I could go, you know, 50 feet 1 week and then 100 feet the next week and then 200 feet the next week. And so I've been walking on my own unassisted for probably 4 or 5 weeks, and now I'm to the point where I feel comfortable enough to walk and live a normal life as far as my physical activity. But outside of that, I throw my things in a fanny pack and move on, and that's kind of always been my mantra with children and things in life. Just, you know, keep doing you.
They actually just decided to start the evaluation process for Jake to be listed for a heart transplant. And the goal is to be listed in a few months. They said the goal is to be transplanted within a year of being listed.
After you have a heart transplant, you have to be in the hospital every week or multiple times a month for almost the first year after your heart transplant, because they have to make sure that this new heart that they're putting in your body isn't getting rejected by the rest of your body. A doctor had once mentioned to me, it's like at the year mark, your body and your heart shake hands and then they're cool with each other.
We here at The Sweet Spot would like to thank Caitlin Parahinag for the all-star caliber work she has contributed all semester long. Hamilton High School shortstop Rock Zerlofsky is committed to UCLA, but could also be drafted in the upcoming MLB draft. Cronkite Sports' Jake Brown has more on the Arizona prospect.
Rock Zerlofsky is the number one high school recruit in Arizona. He attends Hamilton High School, former MVP Cody Bellinger's alma mater. With high expectations heading into the offseason, Zerlofsky is focused on one thing, winning a championship.
I mean, I've gone up in some people's ranks. I've gone down something. I mean, I'm still out here trying to win a state championship. So, I mean, rankings won't make or break me for a state championship.
Hamilton High School won the state championship last year, beating their rival Chandler High School, with Zerlofsky being a catalyst for the team at shortstop. Aside from baseball, Zerlofsky was quarterback for Hamilton's football team. According to his mom, Rock's dad preached playing two sports to become more versatile.
It's just something different. You play once a week and you prep the entire week for that one game. But, I mean, it's not like baseball where you screw up on Friday night, you gotta wait a whole nother week to play.
Zerlofsky committed to UCLA 3 years ago. He said it wasn't just because of the great baseball program, but also the family connection. His mom went to UCLA, and he has extended family in Southern California. As a player, Zerlofsky takes pride in his defense, as noted on his perfect game page with a 10 out of 10. In the end, despite all of his talent and potential, all that matters to Zerlofsky is the present, and to repeat as 6A champions. For Cronkite Sports, I'm Jake Brown.
That's all for this week. The Sweet Spot is produced by the Cronkite News Phoenix Sports Bureau. Reporting in this episode is done with the help of digital reporter Bennett Sylvan and our audio reporters Jeff Hinkle, Caitlin Parahinag, Jake Brown, and myself. I'm your host, Sam Eddy. Make sure to find and subscribe to The Sweet Spot anywhere you listen to podcasts. We appreciate all the sweethearts out there. See you next time.